Hello, welcome to Reanimated, episode 214. This is Stuart from the West Coast, checking in with the zombie fans, along with my co-host, H.A. Conrad.
Hello.
H.A. Conrad coming at us from Brooklyn. Thank you for joining us from the future. Today we are going through episodes 3 and 4 of Fear the Walking Dead season 5, and we have plenty of news to talk about also, so we're going to dive right into that because there's, for some reason, a lot of zombie movies and TV news right now. Number one, in what I would call the category of I'm not excited about it, but it was inevitable, a movie called Zombie Tidal Wave, starring Ian Ziering and from the minds behind Sharknado and sci-fi.
Okay, I have to make a confession. I did not know that Sharknado had like 6 films under its belt. I really had no idea. But Ian Ziering, well done, man. Like, I didn't think you would have a career after 90210, and apparently you have had one. And even, you know, he is definitely the darling of the B-movie sort of genre right now, at least for sci-fi. And I thought it was pretty funny within this article, they talk about the fact that he didn't really want to sign up for Sharknado, but had to do it to keep his insurance through the Screen Actors Guild. And that's how he got, like roped into this stuff. And now on to another wave of these kinds of films with Zombie Tidal Wave. So I can only imagine what this is going to be like.
I guess it pays the bills.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also, it's airing during Shark Week, which is cool, I guess. You know, I'm kind of on board, but we're going to watch and review this. This is going to be something we're going to have to do because Shark Week, but this, yes. I feel like this is where sci-fi's energy went after Z Nation got canceled.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, I thought it was an interesting little article, especially about how he got involved in the franchise, and it was a somewhat unwilling participation. But hey, as you said, it pays the bills and it keeps him out there, and he's definitely been getting solid work from it. So hey, I'm into the B movie thing, and it is this particular franchise is so ridiculous that I would imagine that this new one is going to be equally ridiculous. So it should be good fun summer ridiculousness in terms of like those kinds of silly films. Yeah. Because it's totally tongue in cheek. I don't think I ever watched past the first Sharknado, and it was a tough watch. Let's jump into the next thing. So I guess, you know, I will have to keep my Shudder subscription because they are off producing new films. This is, for those of you who remember Michael Gray Eyes from, the Fear of the Walking Dead.
Who played, Taka Walker?
Yeah. He played Walker. But he basically, he along with a few other Native Americans have come up with a new series, or is it a series?
It's a movie.
Is it just a movie? Yeah. Okay. And they filmed it up in Toronto, and it basically, the premise is that the Native Americans are immune to whatever virus is coming around, and they have to defend their land. And the Native Americans are involved in the full production of this movie, which is rare. Rather than being sort of these like having like a side story or a tropey story, which you often see, I'm actually reminded a little bit of Cargo with the Aborigines in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
In sort of the ideas that they're talking about here, although they didn't have immunity, they just were really good at fighting the virus.
Well, hopefully these guys do better than the Black Hat tribe did in Fear the Walking Dead, where Michael Gray Eyes was the head of that tribe. Yeah, the Black Hats are pretty much all gone. Honestly, when I first saw the art for this, I mistook one of the other guys in the picture for Crazy Dog. I was like, oh, they're making a spin-off movie for Crazy Dog and Walker, and I'd be into that, except wish there were more of their
tribe left.
Their family and friends left alive, yeah.
But anyway, it looks like they wrapped up production for this, and it'll be coming to Shudder and for distribution. They didn't give a specific date, but we'll keep everybody posted on that. So many trailers today.
Yeah.
So
this next one, it looks pretty interesting, although the zombie element might be minor, except that it does headline zombies. Also headlines Sean Bean. And it's coming out on Sky One. It's called Curfew, and it is Death Race meets the zombie apocalypse is kind of how they're pitching it. So it's a dystopian future where racing gets you out of some sort of jam. I guess it's for financial, right? Is that what you picked up from the trailer?
Yep. And maybe freedom. I don't know. It feels a little bit like Thunderdome too, like where you're just, you have to get your freedom through winning this race or something like that.
Or Running Man. But it looks super wacky and zany, like lots of jokes. Billy Zane, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a pretty pretty robust cast. So we will, again, sort of see what happens with this one.
And this one is a series.
Yep. And then there is another series, which is also somewhat zany, which is this Over and Out web series.
I think this is like all up on the web, I think. And
it already is, yeah.
Australian, it's about parenting and the zombie apocalypse, but in a goofy way.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of pushing this as a comedy, a dark comedy, obviously. Yeah. But and there were definitely, I mean, at least the outtakes that I saw were pretty funny. So
I mean, I was a little bit concerned about how they had a 3-year-old kid stabbing actors with a fake kitchen knife. I was like,
yeah,
that doesn't feel like behavior you want a kid to learn how to do.
True. So we'll have to maybe check that out and review that at another time. But it's very Australian in terms of the humor and the writing. So
I recognized a couple of the actors too.
Yep. So did you feel any sort of parenting, you know, like solidarity with these parents?
I mean, they're telling jokes that definitely feel like, you know, parent jokes. So sure.
Yep. Next up was also there was a trailer for a Philippine zombie film.
It'd be a first for us to see.
Yep. Called Block Z. It was a little bit difficult to watch the trailer because it was filmed at some kind of teaser premiere type of thing.
And then just recorded it on their phones. Yeah, there is no good trailer to watch.
But from what I saw of it, it looks pretty cool. So I can't wait to review that. At least the few scenes that they had in there. So we will we'll keep you posted on that.
Did it from the trailer? I didn't watch the whole trailer. Was it all in English or is it in Tagalog?
There were subtitles, it was hard to. And honestly, just the quality of the filming was hard to tell what was happening.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because there's a lot of background noise. So hopefully they'll release an actual trailer or release the trailer that we could see was being released on YouTube or something.
Right. And in other trailer news, we've been talking about this particular film for a while now, but Little Monsters, which is with our, would you call her a scream queen? They're trying to frame her as such, and I think she's just kind of having fun.
Lupita Nyong'o?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, because she was in Us?
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know that quite meets that requirement. I think she's just having some fun. I don't know. Yeah. In the meantime,
that'd be like saying Ellen Ripley, you know, or like Sigourney Weaver's a scream queen, which she never was either. So I wouldn't say that.
But anyway, we had never really seen a trailer for this. We had just seen a few stills and heard a little bit about this. The trailer is somewhat short, but honestly, pretty hilarious.
Yeah, this is more of a teaser because it's like one scene, right?
Yep. But it looks good, and I can't wait to see this. This has been making the rounds at a few film festivals, and supposedly it will be released later this year. So we will also lots of stuff to stay on top of. But I'm really excited.
More grist for the mill. So yeah, perfect. And then what's weird is I had noticed that Talking Dead had not been coming on after Fear the Walking Dead so far in season 5, which is a first for the entire run of that show, of that series. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, you know, with all the weirdness around Hardwick's stuff last year, I wasn't sure if it was related. I still don't. There have been no official answers as to why they did not air it. It is coming back on for the second half of Fear the Walking Dead, which starts August 11th. Instead, they were airing that vampire show that we talked briefly about, Nos. I don't know how you're supposed to say the name.
It's just Nosferatu.
Atu.
Yep.
Instead, that show has been on in the time slot, and so maybe it was purely just a scheduling thing. But I mean, I feel
maybe.
Like Talking Dead has always been a pretty good ratings machine for them too, on top of all the other stuff. So yeah, either way. So Talking Dead is coming back. Talking Dead has been gone. That's kind of the news.
Yeah, and it's coming back. But in other news, also the hiatus between the Fear of the Walking Dead mid-season finale and then the second half of the season premiere is going to be pretty short this year, just a 2-week hiatus, which is very short in Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead terms. But I'm not going to argue with it because I'm pretty I'm kind of digging the season so far, generally.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to jump into the two episodes we're going to talk about?
Okay, sure. Okay, fine. So these are episodes 3 and 4, Humbug's Gulch and Skidmark. Humbug's mm-hmm. Gulch was actually a Coleman Domingo directed episode, which is always fun when the cast gets behind the camera, and written by Ashley Cardiff. The this is a John Dory, June... traipsing into the apocalypse arm-in-arm episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it is adorable for that reason, but it also
makes me worry.
It made me grit my teeth, especially in one scene.
Yep.
Before I saw this episode, I saw a headline like, Fear the Walking Dead just had its most outrageous or ludicrous, they use an adjective like that, kill ever. I was like, okay, where is it? And I kept thinking I had seen it, and... No, I haven't.
Nope.
Until the end. So, but let's begin at the beginning.
We first start out with our group with Alicia and Morgan. And basically they are kind of figuring out what their perimeter is in the area that they are. And, you know, just to remind everybody, they've been coming across these kind of walker roadblocks that are all tied together with intestines and things like that. And definitely pretty in-your-face warning signs with the walkers sort of setting this up. And they're also looking for... they are looking for Al, and they're trying to figure out what's going on here. And in the course of this, John and June are basically ambushed, and we don't know who's shooting at them. But it is kind of the decision to split up in this way, I thought, was a little bit strange because they know that there's something weird going on. So, I mean, not to say safety in numbers, but at least you want to have, I think, more of a, I don't know, to me, to send people off in pairs is not the best idea.
Yeah. Well, at least they're not leaving, a drugged out Luciana by herself again.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the piece that I was like, they know better than this, and especially since they don't entirely know what they're dealing with, other than it's kind of weird, and there's something that, or somebody that is plotting against them and has some heavy artillery and that kind of thing. I just think, given what they're seeing with these walkers, somebody's a little bit deranged, if you ask me, so I just thought it was an odd decision, and again, I have to say, the one thing that is just grating on my nerves through this entire season, and you and I talked about it last season, and we're really hoping they would get away from it, is the damn walkie-talkie thing.
Oh, yeah.
That device, that use of that device is just so, it's so lazy. And you've got a lot of the, you're cutting out and I can't hear you. And they do mm-hmm. this again and again and again. Or somebody's talking on a different channel. Oh, who could it be? And nobody can overhear us. It's just, it is too sloppy to me. And that, I mean, so I that is my gripe about that particular thing. But John and June end up ambushed and then end up in basically what is sort of like a themed Western town, like a theme park called Humbug's Gulch, which apparently they had several of these, and John Dory used to work in one.
This town, it's almost like it's too much of a set. Like, I don't see anywhere where, like, if you were to go to this when it was operating, there's no, like, where would you stand to watch the gunfights? Like, where are the guests supposed to go, right? It's all set. You know what I mean?
Well, I think they're supposed to be on set and part of it, and that was the point.
No, that wasn't clear to me. I mean, I was like, where are the stands? Like, where do you sit down? Where do you buy lemonade? I've never been to a faux Western, old-timey, shoot 'em up thing.
Well, weirdly enough, there used to be one in upstate New York that I went to with my family, and it's now a weird ghost town.
So is it like a Ren Fair kind of thing where you're supposed to get dressed up too?
Yeah, like you're supposed to get dressed up, but you don't have to. And then like they have all these sort of staged things. I definitely remember like gunfights and things like this, and you would walk into like the little places and like you could get a shave or, you know what I mean? And it was always like the cast members would just interact with you as if you were a part of the town.
Sounds like Westworld.
It's kind of like that, just like on a very sort of cheesier scale, you know?
Okay. So yeah, I was a little bit confused about it. It felt like, well, we've got this movie set. What could we do with it? Oh yeah, let's do Humbug's Gulch. That's all. It was a minor gripe. Otherwise I thought it was, you know, it's kind of interesting. They had the
Tumbleweeds,
thank you. It is a little cheesy. This whole episode's a little bit over the top, especially this element of it.
Well, I also, you know, just to your point of confusion about where the guests would go, my guess is they didn't get a ton of guests, right? Like, they're not going to have, like, huge, massive crowds coming here. It looks, you know, already, despite the fact that we're in a zombie apocalypse, it looks a little worn down, even if it was at its best. So
it did look, I mean, they had the one fake horse. That was the only thing. And the two cutouts where you could take pictures. But other than that, it was like, it didn't look like an amusement park or a theme town. It's also not like on a freeway. It seemed to be really in the back of beyond.
Yep.
But they start getting shot at. Whoever's shooting at them is terrible at shooting. Manages just to shoot their car, like, 12 times in two different ambushes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little bit like, who is this stormtrooper who's trying to shoot at John and June? And doesn't he know who he's up against? Like the best shot in the zombie apocalypse. Eventually it becomes clear that this is Dwight, which is, we knew he was coming this season. So but now it's like, all right, how are they going to get through this little misunderstanding?
And you know, they damage him, he gets hit in the arm, and then they take him into the saloon, and June's patching him up, and they manage to convince him that they're the good guys. And then, you know, there is a weapons cache here in the saloon, which also seems somewhat unlikely, but okay, they found one. And there's a lot of sort of back and forth, like trying to convince him that they're good, that he's good and has a chance for redemption. And then there's a lot of stuff definitely between John and June, a lot of exchanges and things. They're talking to Dwight, but they're really talking about their own relationship. And this may, I'll admit to you, this may be a little bit nervous because every time they sort of play up the sentimentality and, you know, this kind of when they have this kind of monologuing, dialoguing, whatever you want to call it, it usually does not bode well. So I was actually a little bit worried into this episode that they were going to off either June or John.
They've put a lot of effort into this relationship. They've got two actors who with amazing acting chops with great chemistry, and I think that the show is facing a, you know, if Daryl dies, we riot sort of scenario. Because what other relationship has ever been this, even Michonne and Rick, it was like cool, but it was also like, right, this is like the third person on the show that Rick has decided he wants to hook up with.
Well, Glenn and Maggie, you know.
Glenn and Maggie were probably in this ballpark, but not even as good. Because
they didn't have as much, I have to say, I don't think they had as much chemistry as these two, and they certainly didn't get as much of a chance to show how much they were like tied like these two. And these two have had, you know, the big she ran away, he's searching for her, and then you had the big payoff when they finally get reunited.
So it's going to be tough if they decide that they need to kill one or both of them off. It's going to be a really ugly turn whoever survives, assuming one of them does. It'll be bad, and for us, the audience. Yep.
But, you know, and we're listening to them talking about their search for each other. Dwight then finally shares that he's looking for Sherry. And I have to to say, and I don't know if this bothered you at all. It definitely bothered me, and it's bothered me all along, is that, so we know that Dwight has a lot of memory issues and is not, he's not operating at full steam or has not been for a while. And it's sort of, it's slightly unclear about why that's happening, whether this is some kind of early dementia or whether it's just sort of PTSD that causes him to compartmentalize so he forgets things and just allows him to survive in the world of, like, this new world, basically. He's been searching for Sherry, and he says things like, oh, she leaves me messages and I find clues to try to find her. And in this world, how, I just feel like it's completely unlikely that he would actually be able to find these clues.
I know.
Like, he's looking, you know, in this particular case, part of the reason he was shooting at their car is that it was a car he thought she had been driving based upon some registration. And it just seems extraordinarily, like, far-fetched.
Mm-hmm. Also, why is he shooting at the car he thinks his wife might be inside?
Right. And also, you know, you can now, or at least mostly know, you can now trust these two that they're not going to, like, do you harm. Why not ask for their help since they seem to be slightly more equipped to deal with this kind of thing? It just feel, and also sympathetic, clearly, to your cause.
You mean, like, so, why did he run back to the van without talking to one of the,
yeah.
It did seem a little bit like, okay, we're finally on the same page. Oh, now I'm going to run off again.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some good set pieces here. There's definitely some stuff where, you know, they're definitely playing up the ghost town where they make this escape using a player piano to attract the walkers and, you know, kind of are running through the set of this town. And so there's some fun stuff there.
June has picked a gunslinger jacket off of the rack of clothes in the costume department. So she looks like a cow person. And John Dory always has. And now they all have these old timey, like Old West Colts and giant hand cannons and little rifles and shotguns. Except for Dwight also has a 9.2 FS. Going back to Dwight's inability to shoot straight, has he always been a really bad shot? I'm thinking, like, when he shot what's her name in the face, in the eye with the crossbow bolt, he also admitted he wasn't aiming for her. He was aiming for Daryl.
Yeah, I think he's always been kind of a bad shot. And he's never been the most... Again, this is like sort of an unlikely survivor in the zombie apocalypse because not only are you dealing with a memory that's just like memories that a brain that cannot handle memories and retain memories. I mean, based upon the stuff we saw from Sherry and why there's like a necessity like to leave the notes, it's like he doesn't retain stuff that's happened.
It's almost like watching Memento or something.
Yeah. So it's there's that. And then there is definitely his ability to shoot seems to be limited. So
once he's on the good guys team, he's fine at shooting zombies, right? He doesn't seem to miss headshots all day long. But yeah, like he couldn't hit either of June or John, just shot their tires in their van a lot. Anyway, not to belabor that. I was really pissed by the end of this episode because he doesn't take the axe with him.
No.
And they're just like throwing guns on the floor, I feel like, in this episode. He throws his 9mm down when it runs out of bullets. I'm like, why would you? Don't you feel like you should take that empty, even though it's empty, take it with you in case you find more 9mm. 9mm's pretty common round. Like those Colts are, I think, going to be completely useless because I don't even know what kind of bullets go in those things. Like John Dory's guns are almost like Rick's in terms of, I assume, rare ammunition.
Right. But a 9mm, you might be able to find some more.
I would hope so. I mean, it's also interesting that you don't see that many people using 22s. Because that, I think, is one of the most common round types of ammunition out there. Even though it's tiny,
right?
A headshot would still kill a zombie. And if that's all they're doing and that's what they're all amazing at, go for it. So we have to talk about the axe shot, though.
Okay. So again, you know, Dwight makes the unlikely decision to run off on his own toward the car. John Dory and June come to his rescue because he gets totally surrounded by a herd of walkers, and
they talk him out of potentially suicide by walkie.
Yes, again, walkie-talkie, and lots of emoting about their relationship and such things, and so they set up this whole thing, and you know, there's a little bit of a gag going on this episode where John Dory is, you know, being teased by June about all the set pieces on, you know, the acting in this theme park, whether he was in the cast and whatever, and he kind of like brushes her off. But they set this up for sort of a grand finale of him doing all the trick shots and things like that, that he would have done in this kind of a like set piece for the theme park. And do you want to talk about the most ridiculous shot ever? Because it is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it's not only the shot. I mean, it is. Yeah, so he splits a bullet and kills two zombies with it, right? So that's the punchline, I guess. It's completely unbelievable. I know it's technically possible, but it's just why bother? They're not that far apart, right? Like they're on this one street. It's close enough that you could run. Like June has already run from the car and thrown John a rifle to make mm-hmm. this shot. Why not just run and go save Dwight? There's only two zombies left. You've killed all the other zombies. They're not like right on him, which is why this shot works. So the hardest thing for me to believe is that Dwight has a zombie on top of him who is dead.
And he can't move him.
And he's on his arm that has been shot. Like, he is wounded. Dwight has been shot by John earlier in the episode. He is basically, he's constantly, like, holding his arm and unable, really, to operate his left hand. Yeah. And yet that is the hand which he has to use to heft this axe using just his wrist, basically, holding it by the very end of the haft. Up above, he lifts it up 90 degrees off the ground, which I think is pretty hard if you're already wounded, and then mm-hmm. like lifts it up above his head and holds it almost perfectly still. They show it moving a little bit.
Yep.
But it's just bananas to me. Like they just threw realism out here. Even though John is a trick shot guy, that's his thing. You don't have to jump the shark like this. And I felt like it was over the top.
Oh, it was definitely over the top.
Over the shark.
Over the shark. And additionally, then, you know, they get through this wonderful scene together. And then John Dory miraculously finds out that the car did not belong to Sherry. And
he
the
just
reason
compares
why that's...
the goddamn VIN number. Like, this is not rocket science.
No. And you know, and this is important because they found the car, obviously, at the radioactive camp. And, you know, everybody was dead there. All the adults, anyway.
I wonder if this car is actually irradiated.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. And then, you know, we do have, like, a payoff of a reunion between Morgan and Dwight, which is, you know, they kind of get over that really quickly.
Yeah, there's no tension there, considering that we remember when Morgan really wanted to murder Dwight.
Yeah, like, I don't know that they would have gone past this so quickly without a little bit more conversation. But basically, Morgan's like, oh, the past is the past, man.
Good
we're
to see
all
you.
Just trying to, we're all just trying to move forward. And it was just like almost like nothing. So I was slightly surprised that that's the route they chose to take.
Yeah. It was pretty funny. And then the end of the episode is they're going to like break through this final cordon that goes for miles and miles of zombies who are tied together, right? Mm-hmm. Like inside the circle is some sort of answer to the mystery of the guts. Yeah. And they're just as they're about to attack this cordon, they get another radio call from the kids who are like, hey, we're coming to help. We're coming to meet you. Then they find the van covered in guts, and inside is Dylan, the youngest of the siblings. Yep.
And his siblings have been taken, and surprise, surprise, they are more than what they seem. And they're kind of, they've got something else going on, and we discover that it's the kids that have been putting these strings of walkers together with their guts. And that's kind of how the episode ends. And there's a little bit of chatter between Annie and Max that are basically like, oh, Dylan won't break, and that he's going to help them figure it out, you know, and that kind of thing. So it seems a bit nefarious. But again, not really surprising knowing what we know about what happened with Charlie. It feels a lot like that kind of a reveal.
They've just put a mole inside the group of survivors. So it's 100% a Charlie move at this point.
Yep. So that's kind of where they leave it. And Are you ready to hop into the next episode, which brings us to our other group of people, or mainly to deal with them, obviously. So
this was Skidmark, which is directed by Tara Nicole Weir, and written by Samir Mehta. The audience numbers have gone down a little bit. Still over a million. 1.66 is this one. The last one was 1.76. But yeah, so this is the Strand and Salazar.
Daniel.
Yeah, storyline. And Skidmark is a weird cat, right? Have you ever met a cat as animated as Skidmark?
I actually have, so.
Like constantly, not a kitten? Because Skidmark looks like a grown cat.
Well, he looks like a young cat to me. So, they're kind of kitten-like for you know, the first couple years, and then they kind of chill out into their adulthood. But yeah, we had one that was just like this, actually.
He's like, there's some scenes where he's like in the background and his head's just moving around constantly. I feel like there's just a handler off screen with a feather on a stick and just like waving it constantly, you know, because it looks like he's just ready to launch all the time, that cat. I don't know. He's just
He's on alert. He's been living in the zombie apocalypse, sure, so maybe he's just a little bit more on edge than like your normal cat. You know, he needs some catnip to keep him like going. I don't know. But anyway, Daniel is still in his warehouse. He's basically shut down Strand's idea about the plane because Strand can't be trusted. And so, like, basically, Victor's plan is to send Charlie in to do some reconnaissance, which is interesting. And suddenly, she's like this super spy.
Yeah, that's been her thing.
Yep. And so, you know, she's basically going in. She's kind of checking things out. She sees the plane. And then she hides in the back of Salazar's car and he helpfully gets into it. So that will set up the next piece of drama.
Yeah. And before we get to that, though, we'd also seen him go to the show opens with him going into a store that has a booby trapped machine gun door. Which is like a cool double drum magazine automatic rifle, which is, wow, okay. And he, like, they show him taking it apart, like setting off the trap, taking it apart, putting it in his car, and then he just has guns and guns and guns in his warehouse. He is pretty well stocked. He also, there's a lot of music. I guess it's some guy called Sunhouse, who I don't know who that is. Do you know who that is? A blues singer?
I have heard it, but it sounds a lot like Lead Belly to me, or something about Lead Belly.
Just a cleaner recording than Lead Belly, but yeah, something on that, in that vein. And he's just listening to it on vinyl, and then he also apparently has it on cassette or CD because he has it in a boombox. But it's like, all right, okay, so Daniel's really gotten into the blues. We get it, showrunners. Copy.
Yep. But apparently, you know, Charlie knows who he is too,
and that's what that is what like paves the way for their relationship, is that she knows this. I'm not going to say that they're like a random or not well known blues singer, because I just don't know him, but she's like, oh, is this a live recording? It's like, oh, you know this guy? And then they're friends, you know, after that, which is kind of funny.
But I mean, Salazar's also got this thing going on where he's protective of Charlie. He basically is saying that Victor sending Charlie in was exactly what he always does, which is hurting people. Mm-hmm. And, basically, like, is still obviously holding on to a lot of hurt because of what happened with Ophelia. And, the interactions between Salazar and Charlie are actually great. Even when he's going into his next sort of reconnaissance to try to take care of yet another booby trap store, she gives him an idea and she knows how to handle it. It doesn't work out well because of that dratted cat that's so animated. There's a good interaction between them. So it's not like he's totally, you know, evil and shut down and doesn't have feeling. Like, he definitely does. So that's an interesting dynamic. He's kind of been living alone in this little storehouse, and he's going out and he has a map of all these different places where these traps are set up. And that's part of his sort of daily routine, is that he's just taking care of neutralizing all these traps.
Yeah, some sort of atonement.
Right.
He mentions that he inherited the warehouse from its previous owner, who set up the traps. He says that to Charlie at one point, but we don't know anything more than that. And it's yeah, there's a lot of questions there. And I think, and this, at the end of this episode, he's like, he goes off to finish dealing with it, right? That's the impression.
Right. And once again, they're using the walkie-talkies a lot in this episode. So Strand goes to check out the plane with Sarah and Wendell, and all the instruments have been taken out of it, and then he sees a sign that says "I'm watching you" or something like that. Or I said no about helping.
Yeah.
And then of course he know. And then it says like the channel of the walkie. So yeah. This is used again. And then Daniel and Strand have a heart to heart over the walkie, where basically Daniel's saying like, "I'm not mad at you for shooting me in the face. I'm mad at you because you wasted my time and I wanted to tell my daughter something." And so they come to an understanding on this, and Victor is able to sort of prove that he has changed, because they do go to help out Daniel, who has released a herd and is basically single-handedly leading this herd away with Sunhouse music.
Like the Pied Piper.
Right, so that Charlie can reunite with Victor and Wendell and Sarah. However, the reason why the whole thing is sort of annoying is because Daniel had set up his whole warehouse as a way to, like, you know, not to be able to kill these things and neutralize them. And Sarah has knocked down his wall and basically totally made his compound vulnerable.
Yeah, absurd. Like, that is a real dick move on her part. Looking at this airplane, doesn't have a landing gear. It doesn't have instruments. Nope. This thing is something they found in a boneyard. Like, I'm talking about the production. They're like, what's a plane that looks like it's been through hell? Oh, this one, which is clearly not operable. I mean, they got the engines to work, I think, or maybe that was CGI. But this plane would not fly.
No, and also it wouldn't fit in. Like, it's not that big. So in terms of them going to rescue this large group of people, how are you going to get enough fuel to make multiple trips?
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like a good idea.
I feel like this was the second big contrived element of these two episodes. The first being the axe shot. With this one, it was the airplane that turned into like a MacGuffin or a Deus Ex Machina to like also solve one scene that felt solvable in so many other ways.
You have multiple people who are used to dealing with walkers. I think, and there didn't really seem to be enough to pose. I mean, you have high ground, you've got the battle van, you've got so many things that this didn't necessarily need to be the way it goes. But basically, Strand takes them out by using the engines, but in the process destroys the engines of the plane.
Of the plane that was never going to be able to fly anyway, right, unless they were going to do a total CGI version of it like they did with that yacht at the end of season one.
Right. And then this little storyline wraps up with all of them, you know, eating in the warehouse as a group.
Well, except that Daniel's leaving to go off and do something. He's I've got an unsolved blah, blah, and he runs off. Yep. And apparently it's October 13th because he keeps ripping.
I don't know that it's necessarily October the 13th because who's been keeping track up until this point?
He like inherited his calendar and then was like, I'm going to make it up to date.
Yep. Then back in the mountains, we've got our group with, trying to figure out the perimeter still. A lot of walkie-talkie action again.
Yeah, because Dylan is on a walkie. Also, I love this scene where I feel like Daniel was on a walkie. Sitting next to him was Charlie, also on a walkie. Yeah. Talking to Strand, who was on a walkie, or like the sit-down radio. And then next to him was Sarah, who's also on a walkie. The only person who didn't have a walkie in this entire scene was Wendell.
It's
just like, what's going on, you guys? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's not bordering on ridiculous. It is ridiculous. The walkies have taken over. It's the walkie dead, right?
Yeah, totally the walkie dead. But basically, Morgan and Alicia are going to search for Al. They get some, you know, Dylan helpfully shows them on the map, which of course you know that he's misdirecting them. And then he very stealthily goes into what's her face? Why am I not remembering her name? It's terrible. Luciana. He's helping Luciana basically set up the tower again so she can talk on a walkie to Strand. Oh, wow. And he basically goes in and he's talking with his brother and his sister. And again, it's like super loud. So it's not like Luciana isn't going to hear that he was on a walkie if she even was like a little bit away from that room. It's like totally loud.
Yeah. I mean, she was outside, and but still, yeah.
It's... Still, and, you know, and basically, oh my, they have run into this weird militarized group or one of them, and they're in trouble. And so suddenly Dylan, after bonding a little bit, and I mean, look, he's had some bonding time with Luciana and this group. He's seen enough to know that they're not bad people. They really do want to help him. And, you know, so basically... outs their plan, or at least reveals what's been happening to Morgan, Alicia, and Luciana via walkie, of course.
Of course.
Morgan and Alicia go and save Annie and Max, and then find a whole group, a gaggle of Lord of the Flies kids.
Yeah, so also, speaking of weird contrived scenes, they are saved in the nick of time. Max and Aunt, what's her name? The girl?
Annie.
They are. She's like twisted her ankle. They're not moving very fast. They are going to get eaten. There are five or six of their zombies that have got away from one of their cordons about to eat them. And saved in the nick of time by Morgan and his new weapon, which is like, what, PVC pipe? It looks...
I don't know.
It doesn't look super bendy and not like a good... Well, either way, he needs a new stick. Preferably something metal that wouldn't get irradiated. But so they're saved, and they're like, look, it's just us out here. And then, yeah, a million kids show up with guns. But where were they 2 minutes ago when their friends were about to get
eaten? Their friends were going to get killed, because there's like a lot of them.
And they also come from every direction. Like, they were apparently just all around, not just walking down the trail towards them to have this, like, chance encounter. So... making no sense, also angering me, because this is clearly unrealistic. Like, they were all just hiding in bushes, watching their friends about to get eaten. But this was not like a planned ambush. This was...
No.
So, yeah, I'm angry at the show for this.
Yeah, it's just strange. And then we reveal a little bit more of the mystery to some extent about the military. They don't know who the military people are. And then the sort of end of the episode is this helicopter taking off, which, of course, we're sort of drawing conclusions in terms of the Rick Grimes storyline.
Well, this is the same. It might not be the same helicopter, but it has the same symbols on it that that took the as the helicopter that took him and what's her name? Trash Lady.
Yep.
Jadis.
Yep, Janus. And so, you know, and we've seen them in their little outfits, and the kids are basically like, you know, Morgan and Alicia are like, oh, we can save you all. And they're like, no, we need to stay here. And it's like kind of weird logic, because it's like, okay, your families are all walkers, and this whole area is irradiated, so this is not going to be a long-term
situation. There's still something missing from this. It's whatever was inside that giant circle. I hope there's something awesome back there.
Me too.
I don't want it to be like, yeah, we were just tying zombies up on the road for no good reason. there better be something awesome behind, like Disney World. Yeah. I don't know what it has to be.
Behind that third door. Yeah. And I know, yeah, so they definitely left it at sort of a cliffhanger. So hopefully we'll get to see what that is.
Tonight.
But we will be taking a little bit of hiatus due to the 4th of July holidays. Holiday week. And we'll come back and be reviewing that episode the following week. Anything else to add?
No, I guess I have a feeling we're going to be wrapping up the on the road portion of the plot for the mid-season finale, which is so I guess that's like three more episodes or more, maybe four. And then we're going to go north and deal with Logan, that interloper, before the end of the season. So I don't know. I feel, even though I had some issues with a couple of the elements of these two episodes, overall, I'm still pretty psyched with the storyline. I just hope we don't have too many more of these like scenes that are difficult to believe, like the airplane being like, and Strand being like, yeah, this will fly. I'm like, brother, that's
not
the case.
No, will not. And also, I mean, I do like the things I like about these episodes is that we are seeing our group working as a team very well. So even though they're making some silly decisions, we don't see people kind of, you know, going off and doing their own thing. They're typically in pairs, and they're communicating, and they're kind of doing their thing.
We like it when everybody gets along.
Yeah.
In the zombie apocalypse.
But at least with our solid group of people, this is a concerted effort, and it's going pretty well. So, so I'm looking forward to seeing tonight's episode, and we'll circle back once we have some 4th of July celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
And if you feel like leaving us a line about these two episodes or about the season in general of Fear the Walking Dead, send us a note, reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a note on our website, reanimatedpodcast.com. And you can tweet at us with our handle, which is reanimatedpcast.com.
That's
anything else?
Reanimatedpcast is not .com. That's just at.
Oh, sorry. Reanimatedpcast. Sorry. I get it wrong every time. No, I tried
that was so
hard.
Close. So close.
So close.
But anyway, thank you all for listening, and we will catch you on the flip flop.
Bye. Ciao.
Threw you off your mojo.
You did.
Bye, ciao.
Bye, ciao. All right. And we're out.